supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a timely question. Should you stop the car when you see those giant bags of yard waste sitting by the curb, discarded like trash? Of course you should. You should save those leaves, and we'll tell you what to do with them that will make your garden grow later in the show. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heaping helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Jennifer, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I am excellent. You sound very good. May I ask where you are?
We live just outside of Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. What can we do for Jennifer, who has a fabulous attitude just outside of Nashville?
So I have some evergreen trees that my neighbor gave me. They got them from the Arbor Foundation.
The Arbor Day Foundation. Yeah, they send out these little tiny baby sticks every spring.
And that's what they were. And I couldn't decide where I wanted to plant them, so I put them in pots.
Good, good.
I also have some roses that are also in a pot that I wanted to plant in the yard that I also couldn't decide where I wanted to plant them. So they're in a pot, and time has gotten away from me, and now we're having some temperatures that are freezing.
Right.
So I've put them in my garage, but now I don't know if it's too late to plant them or if I need to try to keep them alive in my garage through winter.
The great news is it's never too late to plant in the fall or even in the winter. I mean, think about all the people who buy live Christmas trees at winter time and plant them ideally like the day or 2 days after Christmas. And those trees have a very high survival rate.
Okay. And the roses would still be fine to plant as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And here's what I want you to do, because I think it's time to install the roses in their permanent location.
Okay.
And that's a spot that gets morning sun. That's the primary. Even if it gets a little less sun than a spot that stays shady until 11 or 12, you want that morning sun. Roses are very disease prone, and especially as you get down south, the humidity increases and the disease pressures increase. So you want that morning sun to hit roses, tomatoes, lilacs, all those disease-prone plants, and really clean them up. You know, roses are, quote, full-sun plants. That's full sun up in the Northeast, Pennsylvania, New York. Once you get into really hot areas, full sun means, can I please, God, have some afternoon shade?
Okay.
So just take them out of their pots. You don't have to try to disturb the soil they're in. Dig a hole that accommodates them. And when you get them in the ground, mulch them either with compost or with nothing. You don't want to use any wood mulch near roses. No bark.
Yes, well, I quit using wood mulch after listening to you.
And hasn't it been great?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. So mulch them with compost. And we've been going through what I call an invisible drought in our section of the country. We haven't had any rain for 3 or 4 weeks. So people who've installed plants recently, even though the temperatures are very low, the daytime temperatures are warming up. So if you're going through a really dry stretch over the next 6 weeks after planting, don't be afraid to let a hose drip at the base of the plant for a couple of hours in the morning, one day a week. And if it hasn't rained for a while, do that the morning after you plant them.
Okay.
Now, if you're not sure where the trees are ready to go, what kind of pots are they in? Are they in plastic pots?
Yes.
Excellent. Just dig little holes anywhere it's convenient and drop the pots into the ground.
Okay.
And then in the spring, you can dig them up again or you can just leave them there in the ground. And then the ideal time, because these trees are so small, you've done exactly the right thing carrying them through their first year in pots. That's the smart money. I would do the same thing again next year. Make sure you protect them against deer or rabbits. You know, you might put a little fencing around them or something so they don't get eaten. There's not a lot to them yet, is there?
No.
Yeah. Next season when it warms up, bring them back. Take care of them exactly the way you did this past summer. And then plant them, like, ideally September of next year. And in the meantime, you'll figure out where you want them.
Yes, that sounds great.
All right, Jennifer, you got a plan.
Okay, that sounds perfect.
All right, good luck.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. You take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Ken, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Ken. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you today?
I am excellent. Thank you for asking, sir. Where is Ken fine?
Ken is fine in Ventura, California.
The Ventura Highway.
Yes, beautiful 101.
Okay. Now, help me out here, Ken. I used to think I knew everything about California, but I'm realizing now that we're getting a lot of calls. There's so many microclimates. What's Ventura like?
Well, Ventura is obviously it's a coastal community, but not too far inland, there's opportunities for microclimates. As in the subject of my question is, I'll be purchasing a property in a microclimate in between the Ojai Valley and Ventura,
mm-hmm.
and it gets rather cold there. I've heard it gets down to freezing. So I'm calling for your opinion on what would be good to grow, and specifically in the nature of fruit trees.
Okay, so it gets down to freezing, so we know citrus is out.
Yeah.
So yeah. It sounds like you have a more conventional climate. How hot does it get in the summer?
Into the 90s is not uncommon at all.
Are you near a desert?
No, it's just sandwiched between the Ojai Valley and Ventura, and it's a valley area itself. There's rather large hills on each side. Maybe some kind of coastal influence comes in there through there and gets real cold because they can grow the citrus in Ojai and they grow the citrus in Ventura, but for some reason I don't see any of them in this little town called Casita Springs.
Now, you are in a low-lying area, the area you bought. That's why it gets cold, right, because it collects frost.
Yes.
Okay. Is the land that you bought, does it have hills and valleys, or is it mostly down in a little valley?
It's down in a little valley, and it's flat. It's about an acre, and I'll be planting perhaps a third to a quarter of that with fruit trees.
Okay. All right. So your fruit abilities are going to be exactly the same as mine in Pennsylvania. Unlike a lot of Californians, you're not going to have to worry about chilling hours. You know, a lot of people in your state, the southern part of California, they can't grow things like raspberries, apples, peaches, pears, you know, fruits that have what's called a chilling requirement, where they really have to have X hours of temperatures below 40 degrees for extended periods in the winter. So you can grow, I'm presuming, apples, peaches, pretty much everything that's considered, quote, a northern fruit. But in truth, you know, a lot of apple production is over on the West Coast. You can grow apples easier than we can because you have fewer pests that go after them than we do. And again, you can grow peaches and stuff whereby a lot of people in Southern California can't. I would imagine you could also grow really good grapes. Are there any wineries near you?
Yes, there are some wineries. They do fairly well where I am. More of the robust wineries are you know, further north, but in our area there are a couple that do well.
I'm seeing the really good wines of California move further down the coast all the time, man. So here's the deal. You want to talk to your neighbors. You want to note what's growing in your neighborhood, so to speak. You also got to get a hold of your county extension agent. And they'll be very helpful with what your parameters are and with variety choices. How long do you think this possibility of freezing weather remains in the spring?
I would just imagine it runs through, you know, December, January, maybe February. Yeah, I don't know for sure.
You're going to have to find that out because if you have the possibility of frost occurring late, you are going to want to buy trees that blossom late in the season. Because the really the only way to lose an entire crop of fruit is if you get a freeze during the formation of the flowers or the little baby fruits. That's the worst thing that can happen, because then the plant has just shot its load for the year and you got to wait another year. And you, okay. And if you are really down in a valley where cold is going to settle, you're always going to be risking that. So obviously you want to grow what you're going to enjoy eating. Maybe you don't like peaches, but you like apples, or maybe the other way around. Pears grow sensationally out there. There may be some other things that you can grow. If you like grapes, I think you could kick butt with grapes, because they like those cold winters and hot summers, as do a lot of these things, you know, peaches and apples and everything like that. But what you want to do is get late-blooming varieties. You really want to pay attention to that.
Okay.
And that extension agent may even have the names of the latest flowering varieties ready for you to rock and roll with.
Perfect. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Well, good luck on your great adventure, man.
Excellent.
All right,
sir. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. You take care.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll once again host the Empty Bowl Benefit Dinner for the Homeless on Wednesday evening, November 20th, at a new location this year, the Lutheran Theological Seminary on Germantown Avenue in Philadelphia. And then I'll lead a trip to Cuba to explore their botanical wonders this coming January 14th to the 22nd. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and what to do with all those bags of precious leaves you take away from the curb. I'm treasure-picking Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers gift certificates, both traditional and e-cards, that can help make holiday giving easier. Burpee gift certificates are available online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, once all our own leaves are shredded and piled and binned, we look with longing on all those bags sitting out at the curb, those special bags that say yard waste. We know the treasure they contain. We'll tell you how to utilize that treasure the best way possible after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Mark, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I am doing very well, Mark. How are you, sir?
Doing great.
And where is Mark doing great?
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Ah, home of some of the richest topsoil in America. What can we do for Mark in a farmer's paradise?
Well, we purchased a home about 3 years ago that I know had Zoysia grass plugs installed years ago, And I just noticed that the shoots have run underneath the driveway a little bit, about 3 inches, and is taking little chunks of the driveway with it. And I was wondering if there's any way to stop this from going any further into the driveway, because we actually share the driveway with our neighbor.
So you moved into a home. It has zoysia grass. What is the driveway made of?
Well, I think it's blacktop.
Okay. And the zoysia grass is actually chipping away at the edge.
Yes.
Man, that stuff is like little bamboo. It really will annex the next colony. That's when I grew up. My dad must have read one of these ads in the back of the magazines, because even today, most people buy zoysia grass mail order. They get the little plugs in the mail from down in Florida. And we had a little row home in Philly, but we had adjoining lawns. Two houses would share a lawn, then there'd be a set of stoops, then the same thing would be repeated for about 20 houses up and down the block. And our neighbors had a cool season lawn, and my dad planted the zoysia grass lawn, and it was my job to cut. And I'll tell you, within 5 years, their lawn was almost completely gone. It had been totally overtaken by our zoysia grass. How wide is the driveway?
About 10 feet wide.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you a good enough driver that you could have edging on the side and you wouldn't feel the need to cheat and drive on the lawn every once in a while?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because that's the only thing that's going to stop it. And it might look neat, you know, to have this thing coming up at a 90-degree angle. It wouldn't need to be tall. You know, maybe you'd get edging that is a foot high, let's say, and you'd bang like 8 inches of it into the ground and just edge the driveway with it, and that will hopefully keep the zoysia on your side.
And you have to go down 8 inches?
I would think 6 inches would be the minimum, but, you know, roots can go down quite a distance, and I think one of the things we want to do is prevent the zoysia grass, honestly, from making that long march underground. I don't think it's not going to go over the top, because as you know, I mean, you've been caring for the zoysia grass?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to give it as high a cut as a cool season lawn. You can cut that at 2 inches all summer long. And my guess is you don't have any weeds, and you don't have to cut it that often.
Exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, you do have to put up with a long period of dormancy in Lancaster. I mean, you know, you're dormant for like 7-8 months of the year. It must be going dormant now, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's getting there. I'm not lawn obsessive, so it's not a big deal to me.
Well, they're really good lawns for people who are, because they're very low maintenance and weed-free. You just have to not be bothered by the fact they go tan and dormant. And, you know, your timing is really good, because when it's dormant is the time that it won't fight back, so to speak. This is the correct time of year to do this. Don't wait till spring to put the edging in. Because once the lawn starts to green up again, zoysia grass becomes unstoppable for the summer. Once it's actively growing, as you've seen, it's a very powerful lateral force. But when it goes dormant, this is the time that you can remove sections of it. It won't fight you back. And this is the time for you to install some edging and protect that driveway and keep good relations with your neighbors.
Okay. And what kind of edging would you recommend?
We're talking some sort of very rigid plastic, but very high strength, or metal. We're not talking wood or anything like that. We're looking the opposite of biodegradable. Probably what you're going to find is a high quality plastic edging. And, you know, if you're in a lucky situation, you might be able to go into a garden center or a big home store where they have these good, better, best levels. You want the best. You want something that's going to allow you to really hammer it down and get a nice, tight fit next to that driveway and, you know, for it not to develop cracks and splinters and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, so then when I dig down, if I don't see any of those shoots, then I know I've dug down far enough.
I'm predicting you're going to see shoots going down at least 18 inches.
okay.
But I don't think you need to do that. Once the grass gets completely, like, under the center of the driveway, you know, sending out the scout rhizomes and stuff, it's going to give up because it's just not going to get far enough. But I think this will do the job. And if it comes up on the other side, you'll call me back in 2 years.
Okay, great.
All right, Mark. Good luck, man.
Hey, thank you.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Nick, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I am doing very well, Nick. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good.
And where is Nick doing pretty good?
I'm in Huntington, Indiana, northeast corner.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Nick in Indiana?
I need to grow some garlic, so I know you plant it in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to know, like, how far apart and the depth.
Well, do you have any planting garlic yet? We're kind of running out of time.
Well, I don't have any yet, but I need to get back home to order it. I'll probably order it over the phone. And
we're getting late in the season. It's not like spring bulbs. You want your garlic to get some root growth. So you say you're not home. Where are you now?
I'm in Tupelo, Mississippi. Well, I should be home this weekend.
That's kind of a different climate. What are you, a truck driver?
Yeah.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay, so when you get back home to Indiana, are there any farmers markets near you, any small-scale organic farms, anything like that?
Some place where I can pick up some garlic and plant it right away.
Exactly, yeah.
I can look around and I can do that.
But yeah, it's not like anything you frequent or anything like that.
No.
Because I don't want you to fall into a black hole. Now, don't use supermarket garlic. That's not the right kind for your climate. Yeah. That's all grown in either California or China. And most of it's been treated with a sprouting inhibitor, so it tends not to get good results. You want to grow a hard neck garlic, which is the most common, the most popular varieties, and they're good for, like, your cold winters. The basic answer to your question is you've worked with garlic, so you know each head is made up of a number of different cloves.
That's right.
So when you're ready to plant, you pick your most fertile soil, your loosest, richest soil. You can't plant in heavy clay. You can't plant in a low-lying area where water's going to collect. You want it to be nice and light and loose and good draining. That's the only thing that garlic really needs. Then you'll break apart these heads very carefully, and you'll plant each individual clove about 6 inches deep, which means, you know, 6 inches from the butt end of the garlic. And then about 6 inches to 8 inches apart. And right now, time is your enemy. You want to get it into the ground while it'll still have a month or so to grow some roots. Next season, should we do this adventure again, like anywhere from mid-September to mid-October is the best time. And a lot of people are planting right when the kids go back to school at the very end of August, beginning of September, to give a chance for that root growth. But you should still be fine. Just don't delay. Get your planting garlic right away, however you do it, whether you mail order it and have it shipped to you quickly or whether you can get it at a local farmer's market or something like that. And then next season, all you have to do is control weeds. So I would shred up some leaves when you're home. And when the sprouts come up, spread an inch of shredded leaves, you know, to help keep the weeds down, keep moisture in the soil. And then in late spring, the central stalk next year will send up a curlicue with a little bulge on the end. Those are the garlic scapes. Don't let them escape. Cut those off, the bulges at the top, as soon as you see them to prevent the formation of a seed head. That'll help you get a bigger bulb underground. And then you'll pull them when the bottom third of the plants has turned brown. Not before that, not after that, when the bottom third has turned brown, which in my garden tends to be right around the 4th of July.
Okay.
All right, good luck, man.
That's what I like.
But get that garlic in hand, all right?
Okay.
All right, take care.
Thanks.
1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm quite well. How are you?
I am doing just fine today. Thank you, sir. Where is John well?
I am up in Haines, Alaska.
I've been there. I know that part of Alaska very well. It's a very nice place, very moderate climate. Winters aren't nearly as cold as people think, and the summers aren't as hot as you would like to grow your tomatoes, right?
Yeah, it's pretty mild, and which is one of the reasons I'm here.
Oh, it's a beautiful, absolutely beautiful area. For people who haven't been up the Inside Passage and seen Southeast Alaska, it's just, it's amazing. It's like going to another planet, but a nice planet. So what can we do for John in Haines?
So I had a question about alder trees. They're a pretty hardy little shrub here, or a bush, or I guess it can actually even get up to trees. But I want to pick your brain about ways of controlling them, take them down. I have a couple of stands of them on the edge of my property at the house that we just bought, and I was looking at them. Looks like they've been chainsawed before, and they seem like they sprout back thicker.
Yeah, well, alders are a very interesting tree. Way back in the late 80s, I wrote a book with the late Bob Rodale about famine in the Third World. And one of the most interesting parts to me, translating Bob's ideas, was the fact that there's often not a food deficit in these Third World countries. There's a firewood deficit and clearing of areas for fires, which were very important. They were part of the home life. They were a method of fumigation to keep insects out of a house. And, they were part of the cultural life. But deforestation of wood for fires was one of the things causing poverty and degradation of the land. And so the answer was what's called alley cropping, with these trees that not only rapidly regrow when they're cut down, but which are nitrogen-fixing trees. Were you aware that your alders are leguminous trees?
I was not.
They are living reserves of nitrogen, the primary plant food. Like soybeans, like peas and regular beans, these nitrogen-fixing plants have the ability to bond with a living organism in the soil that then allows them to take plant-feeding nitrogen out of the air we breathe, use it to feed themselves, and then when the tree itself is harvested, all of the parts of the tree are a tremendous source of fertilization, nitrogen fertilization. For instance, in the Third World, the leaves are constantly trimmed off, the leaves and small branches, and these are laid down between real crops, and they slowly release nitrogen into the soil. So they are considered, in the right environment, these trees save lives. These trees save villages. Black locust was the one that Bob liked the most, but this is a tree very similar to it. They're both fast-growing, regrow from stumps, fix nitrogen. All the other girls like them. They make all their own clothes. Are they growing in an area where you want something else to be, or do you want to keep them off in their alder preserve?
It's a place I was considering a garden. It's fairly wooded, so an area that gets even a little bit of sun is pretty premium.
I hear you. Like I said, I know your area.
Some of the ones that are probably seems like they've been cut back a couple of times or a little closer to a power line right away, but the part that I was mostly concerned about was the area I was thinking about building up a garden.
Now, the power line, is that private, or do you actually have, like, and I don't mean to be rude here, but I know Alaska kind of operates on different systems than we do. Is this like a power company line?
It is. Not a big line. It's just a small power pole line.
I'm just wondering, if you contacted them, would they perhaps come out and do some progressive removal to protect the future integrity of the line?
They actually do it somewhat unprompted.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe you could get together with them and organize something that would involve more of a clearing, and then some of your work would get done for you.
Okay.
That's one thought. Whenever there's trees that are a problem near power lines, I always think, let's get the power company involved in this. The worst they can do is say no, right?
Yeah.
And at best, they may come out with a backhoe and give you a new life.
I see.
So here's the deal. I think to keep the alders where they are, and remember now that these trees are valuable, that when you do cut them down or uproot them, they should be composted with a lot of coffee grounds. Chip them up as finely as you can. Compost them with coffee grounds. They're a tremendous source of natural fertilizer. But I think sooner or later you're going to have to install what's called rhizome barrier. This is mostly sold to prevent running bamboo from running into places that it's not wanted. But this is an underground root trench barrier that will make a good barrier and keep the alders on the other side. And then on the side that you wish to cultivate, you can either over a course of a year or two just completely keep pruning these things back to the ground. And then you should be able to get in and uproot the weakened roots very easily. Or get in there with a backhoe, you know, make a line of demarcation, clear the roots out from that one side, and you should be good to go. But without rhizome barrier, these things are probably going to keep advancing. Your only alternative would be to cut all of them to the ground like 4 or 5 times a season for several years.
Okay.
So I think you cordon off a patch, you know how to use it now, and then on the other side, once you've gotten this root system under control and out of there, you can build a sensational garden.
Cool. Mike, thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thanks.
Take
care.
Have
a good day.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind those of you who are planning to have a truly live tree this Christmas, that's one that you'll hope to plant outdoors after the holiday, to dig the planting hole now. Because you really do make a Warner Brothers cartoon noise when you attempt to jam a shining shovel into frozen soil. But don't you go practicing your best Yosemite Sam imitation just yet. Because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and what to do once you've filched all those wonderful bags of leaves from your neighbor's curbside. I'm leaf-rustling Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers gift certificates, both traditional and e-cards, that can help make holiday giving easier. Burpee gift certificates are available online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. What do you do when you get home with all those bags of leaves you've rustled from the curbside? Are they safe to use? What do you have to do to them? Should you compost them? Should you make mulch from them? We'll answer all of those burning questions. No, don't burn them. Right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Anne, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Anne. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am doing very well. And where is Anne Fine?
Well, I'm calling from Long Beach Island, New Jersey, which is about 100 miles south of Manhattan.
Oh, I know where Long Beach Island is. You guys got hit hard.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, and I've been seeing some reports, the recovery for you guys has been, like, abysmally slow for parts of your area and the Rockaways and stuff.
Sadly, all of that is true.
And I hope you guys get it back together down there, because that whole coastline is just such a beautiful place.
Well, Jersey Strong, we're going to come back roaring.
What could we do for Ann, who's Jersey Strong?
Three seasons ago, in 2011, I planted knockout roses, which are supposed to be drought-resistant and pest-free. But that hasn't been the case. The first year, they were fine, but last year and this year, they have two distinct diseases. One is yellow leaves with brown spots, and then those leaves turn black. The second is the leaves begin to turn dark around the edges and then progressively turn back. I went to a local nursery who advised me that I was giving them too much water. When I cut back on the water, that helped a little bit, but soon the same problems were back. Strangely, when I cut them at the end of the season, prune them down, the next season they grow back just fine. But by July, I see these two problems.
Okay. Now, knockout roses are bred to be disease resistant, but no rose is disease proof if it's in the wrong conditions. And I'm hoping there's some conditions here we can change. They get full sun?
They do.
What are they mulched with?
A dark mulch with wood, a bark kind of base.
Well, your problems are solved, Ann.
Oh,
yes.
Good to know.
Yeah. No rose can survive wood mulch. Even if it were, quote, triple premium shredded bark, wood longs to make friends with all the fungal organisms in the air. Wood, once it's no longer part of a living tree, wants to become soil. And it largely does so with the help of fungal organisms that are all throughout our atmosphere and our environment. And it sounds like the first one that you have is the dreaded black spot. Black spot spores are ubiquitous. They're also everywhere. They're going to be blowing in from other people's areas and gardens. So first thing I want you to do, I want you to get rid of every trace of wood, and then I want you to mulch them with compost. The soil has to be sandy, right?
Yes.
Right. So you should be mulching your roses with 2 inches of compost in the spring and then about half again midsummer, just to keep replacing the organic matter that is constantly being used up by your hot summer environment and the fact that your sandy soil does drain well. And one of the reasons you've had to water excessively is the fact that sandy soil doesn't hold water. Mm-hmm. But once we start a regular system of adding compost to your sandy soil, you'll have a rich, fertile soil that repels disease organisms and holds water much better. Now, how often do you water and how exactly do you do it?
I have a little drip sprinkler every other day for 30 minutes, and that happens all summer.
And you just let it lay at the base of the plant?
It's buried about an inch down.
The answer here is going to be absolutely very easy. What you want to do is get rid of that wood mulch now. It is full of spores. It's full of disease spores that are just waiting for warm weather to come alive. So you want to get that wood mulch out of there and literally throw it away. Then you want to find some high-quality compost, whether you get it from a fellow gardener, whether you buy some bulk compost at a garden center, whether you buy someone really high-quality compost in a bag. And I want you to mulch around your roses at least an inch deep, preferably 2 inches. And then in the spring, after the roses begin growing again, let them grow for a couple of weeks and then give them a good pruning again. That's when you should be pruning your roses. You shouldn't be cutting off their growth in the fall. That's also weakening them. So you want to let the old growth remain over winter and then clean it all up in the spring. And then about 2 months after that, I want you to put down a fresh mulch of 2 inches more compost right on the surface. You can keep your watering regimen, and then every spring and every summer, add another inch or two of compost to the surface of the soil. I predict you will not see any more blackness on your leaves, period, done, out the door, tax and tags.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. You take care and good luck down there.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Nick, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I had a question about my garden with regarding tomatoes. I live in outside of Washington, D.C., right at the border of Washington, D.C. and Maryland, Tacoma Park, Maryland. And I've
gotcha.
Had a garden now for 4 years.
Right.
When I first moved into the house, the garden did really well. So I'm just trying to plant tomatoes and cucumbers primarily. And then as the years have gone forward, my tomatoes have been doing less and less well. And, you know, people had suggested that I compost, and I did do composting using kitchen scraps and leaves primarily. And I think the compost I had was pretty good from what I've read online and talked to different people about. By this last summer, I still didn't get the kinds of tomato growth that I wanted, just very few tomatoes growing.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a lot of cucumbers. My cucumbers did great. My tomatoes didn't do great. And I guess I'm wondering what I should be doing now in preparation for next summer, spring and summer, to get my tomatoes growing better.
You should be shredding leaves. Are you trying to compost whole leaves with kitchen scraps?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You really want to shred the leaves. You'll make better compost that way. Try not to overdo the kitchen scraps. Go out and invest in a leaf blower that has a reverse setting, a little electric leaf blower that you can use as a vacuum. It sucks up the leaves and shreds them. If you got a lot of room, make a big pile. If you're in a crowded area where the neighbors are looking, get one of those nice recycled black plastic composters. Fill it up mostly with leaves. Don't overdo the kitchen waste, although the more coffee grounds you put in there, the better.
I see. Okay.
What kind of tomatoes are you trying to grow?
I mean, I try to grow either vine tomatoes or not the really big kinds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to grow the smaller kinds. I'm not trying to grow like the big, gigantic hothouse ones or anything like
okay,
that.
Okay, good. Now, you're totally correct. The first year you put a garden in a new area, you tend to do sensational. But yes, after 3 or 4 years, your soil gets tapped out. Are you growing in flat ground or raised beds?
Flat ground.
I would urge you to at least build 1 4x8 raised bed. No more than 4 feet wide, so you can reach into the center without stepping into the bed. Frame it out a little bit. You'll get much better results, because the second biggest human cause of plant death or lack of performance is compacted soil, because you're always walking on the soil right on top of your plant roots. You compress the soil. The roots have to struggle to get nutrients, air, and water. You build a raised bed, you never step into the bed. The soil is light and loose. It's the difference between a shabby hotel room and like the Four Seasons with like the most comfortable mattress.
That's a pretty big difference. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's very important that you start paying attention to where your tomatoes are planted. Because if you're only growing tomatoes and cucumbers, you want to rotate them. You don't want to plant tomatoes in the exact same spot year after year after year. A wilt will develop in that soil, basically verticillium wilt, sometimes fusarium wilt, but the effect is the same. Every year, your tomato leaves at the bottom start turning yellow earlier and progress faster up the plant. And all you have to do is next year plant your tomatoes where the cucumbers grew.
Okay. All right. Well, that's easy enough.
Next spring, go and buy a couple of bags of high-quality compost and spread those underneath your plants. And don't be afraid to get a gentle organic fertilizer and give them a summer feeding. For plants like cucumbers and tomatoes, I like to get a fish and seaweed mix. It comes in a liquid form. You put it in a watering can with water. You stir it up. You just water it at the base of the plant. It's a great way to give your plants a midsummer boost.
Oh, that's interesting. I had no idea about that. Okay, I'm writing that down. Thank you.
All right, Nick?
Great. Well, I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much. I'll call back with a good report next fall, then.
I expect you probably could. Yes.
All right. Thanks again.
All right, Nick. All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Treasure picking other people's curbside leaves. Alexis Landish, You Bet Your Garden producer, please read us this week's thieving question.
Sure, Mike. Joel in Huntington Valley, PA writes, I've been stealing what you call SPBs from my neighbor's trash, much to their confusion, to add the precious leaves they contain to my compost pile, as per your frequent recommendation, and have two questions. First, the bags say that they're compostable, and I've thought about running them over with my lawnmower along with the leaves they contain, but do they have any actual nutrition to add to the compost? Second, a lot of the bags have small amounts of grass clippings mixed in, presumably from the leaves being picked up by mowers going over a lawn. I know that the combination of grass clippings and shredded leaves can be great for getting good compost fast, but if the lawns were treated with chemicals, could enough contaminants be present to hurt my plants? Thanks. Well, first, we have to thank Joel for a great question, and a timely one, too. Won't it be last call soon for this year's leaves?
Absolutely. But I guess first I have to explain what SPBs are.
I wish you had called them FPBs for foolish people bags, not stupid people bags.
Yeah, I know. Some people are upset by the somewhat ungracious name I coined over a decade ago for those oversized special yard waste bags that people have to use when they put precious things like leaves, prunings, and grass clippings out at the curb for trash pickup. So I'll tell you what, let's just call them less than smart people bags. At any rate, at this time of year, the material inside those bags tends to be mostly to all leaves, which are the priceless resource for organic gardeners. Those leaves can either be shredded and then piled or binned to become fabulous rich black compost, or just shredded. Shredded leaves alone make a superb natural mulch, preventing weeds, retaining soil moisture, and encouraging earthworms to improve the soil underneath.
But they have to be shredded.
Absolutely. Whole leaves mat down like a tarp. They can take years to compost, and they actually smother the soil if you use them like a mulch. And they take up 10 to 20 times more space than the same amount of leaves after a good shredding.
And that's why a lot of organic gardeners are furiously shredding all the leaves they can gather at this time of year. As you always say, no one ever gets to August wishing they had made less compost or saved fewer leaves.
Which is why many of us look with longing on those brown treasure chests sitting out at the curb after all of our own leaves have been shredded, mulched, piled, or binned. Those leaves have been discarded like trash.
Oh, so our esteemed host is a trash picker?
No, a treasure taker. Seize the SPBs and seize the day, baby.
And what do you do with these giant bags of treasure, Blackbeard?
It's more like Graybeard these days. Anyway, Joel's instincts are correct. Processed brown paper bags contain little to no nutrition. But the bags themselves are good and sturdy, so I use some of them for storage of just shredded leaves. Any type of shredding, whether with a blower vac, chipper shredder, or a lawnmower, will reduce the volume of a pile of whole leaves by at least a factor of 10. And I always try and refill at least one bag with what had been 10 to 20 bags of whole leaves. Then I'll store those leaf-alone bags in a cool, dark place where composting will be kept to a minimum, and use the shredded leaves as mulch in parts of my vegetable garden next season.
And for spring and summer compost making, right?
Absolutely. Hoarding shredded leaves now allows you to make fresh batches of compost before the next leaf fall. And the rest of the bags get used as weed barrier in the lanes between my raised beds or for potting soil storage. And in some rare instances, like when a bag is filled with nothing but leaves and is in perfect shape, I'll carefully refold it and return the bag to the house they were treasure picked from with a thank you note.
I'm surprised they don't call the cops. Now, what about bags that have grass clippings mixed in?
Well, as we've been warning, and as you well know, many modern, quote, improved lawn herbicides are so deadly to non-grass plants and so persistent that compost made from the clippings can kill entire gardens. So if I get a bag that has grass clippings in the bottom and leaves on top, I'll put all the clippings back into the bag for disposal and just save the leaves.
But what about the bags that contain a mix of shredded leaves and grass clippings that were collected by mowing a leaf-covered lawn?
You know, they're potentially treacherous, but they're really tough to turn down. You don't know for sure that that homeowner used persistent herbicides. And as fellow treasure pickers know, SPBs that contain pre-shredded leaves are more tempting than Belgian chocolate. And shredded leaves mixed with grass clippings do make hot, high-quality compost. So I always keep this potentially wonderful and/or deadly stuff, but in strict isolation these days. Designate a container for such material and label it clearly. Then next season, you can test the finished product for herbicide residues by planting some pea seeds in it in a warm room indoors. If the seeds sprout and the young plants look healthy, that compost is safe to use. Well, that sure was a lot of interesting information about what to do with those foolish people bags, now wasn't it? Luckily for those of you who want more detail, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to contaminate my compost if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse team, because we're garden short, at garden@whyy.org. Please, please, please tell us where you live, please. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Al Banks. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar are You Bet Your Garden's internet illuminators. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our trash pick staff includes editor Al Banks, production assistant Effie Kong, and Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Hi, my name is Mike.
Hi, Mike.
I'm your host, and it's been 11 and a half months since I last took bags of strange leaves away from the curb. And hey, look over there. There's 7 big ones in a row. And I see leaves sticking out the top of one. Shredded leaves. Alexis, pull over. No, I'm serious. Pull over. All right. And I'll see you and your leaves next week. Pull over. No, I'm serious. I'm serious. I mean that. Look, they're fading behind us. Come on, get over. Pull over. Who you gonna call when invasive weeds interrupt stormwater flow? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll interview the Sheep Busters. Plus, the question of the week and your fabulous phone calls.